You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome indeed to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And for all of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome. We're glad to have you. And I think it's going to be an exciting experience for you. And I hope you come back each and every day. You do need to know, if you're new, that we have a free weekly newsletter. Go over to kevinsmithshow.com. And look for a button with red letters. It says K-Files E-Zine. You can sign up right there. Absolutely free. No strings attached. Well, these are indeed interesting and exciting times in which we live. And I've lived through quite a number of interesting and exciting times in my 55 years. As I am sure you have in whatever amount of time you've been on the planet, it's just a cool place to be, Earth. And, you know, one of the things I do each day is I go through all kinds of news. I look at, I usually do that late at night after I get off the air. But every 24-hour period, I go through lots and lots of news. And I look for things that fall into our genre for us to talk about. And I find things that sometimes are not in our genre that just are interesting. And here is one that is sort of borderline in our genre because we talk about alternative energy. And one of the articles that I found not only is about alternative energy, but it involves the border police in two countries where I have some experience. Serbian customs, as there was a train coming from Bulgaria, and as you come from Bulgaria, there is one, if you take a look at the map, you'll see this, there's one way there where you come from Bulgaria and cross a little band of Serbia and then into Macedonia. And so there was a train headed from Bulgaria down into Macedonia, but it had to cross through Serbia. Well, anyone who's done any international travel on trains knows that the train is always stopped, its papers are checked, and the people on board the train, their papers are checked, and then you can go on your way. Well, they stopped it because of crossing the border, but then they found... They checked this train and found that one of the freight wagons on this train had a radioactivity 3,000 times over permitted levels inside of one of the carriages of the train and 300 times on the outer surface of the carriage. And by carriage, it was not a passenger carriage. It was hauling junk metal. Scrap metal. And so, to make a long story short, they ended up turning it around and sending it back to Bulgaria. They pulled that load. It could not go on. The article says that, Bulgaria has turned Serbian trains around before, and Serbia has turned Bulgarian trains around before. So this is not any big deal. Well, it's not, but it brought back some memories. Back during the Milosevic years, I was detained by Yugoslavian police at the border of Yugoslavia and Romania two times. And at the border of Macedonia and Bulgaria, I was detained by the Bulgarian border guards for over 4 hours. Well, as you see, I'm free today. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host. It's Open Line Live tonight, and I brought a few things to the table as well. Let me lay out a couple of things here for you, and then we'll go to the telephone where we have a caller on hold. First of all, on Open Line Live, that means that we will talk about anything you desire to talk about, all right? We will, all you have to do, if you don't like the topic we're talking about, it's just like a talk show jukebox. You punch the numbers on your telephone, and when you get through, you simply tell us the topic that you're interested in, and we'll talk about it with you, all right? So Open Line Live is on. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. Now, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Well, we've got a good connection tonight, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Oh, finally, we finally have a good connection. It's kind of funny. I usually only have a bad connection when we've got a guest on the show.
Well, it's two completely separate phone system, so there's no linkage there technologically.
It's either the Walmart phone or Pojica, one or the other. It's bad, but you know, Kevin, you know, I'm doing radio broadcasting, and the first rule of thumb that we always learned is that the microphone is always on. Even if the power's out, the microphone's always on, right?
Okay.
You know, we heard you going on the CLI Media Network.
Yeah. I had the microphone on while the music was on. That's true.
Yeah, okay. You know, I suffered from disconnectivitis for about 2 months from the Kevin Smith Show because I was moving away for college and whatnot to go to broadcasting school. And something happened in Needles, California that I haven't managed to be able to get much news upon. Was there a bit of a UFO crash I heard about there? What's been going on with that?
Well, I've been trying to follow that. There's not much news coming out of there, but apparently there was something that went down. Apparently there is a great deal of secrecy around it. But, yeah, we're trying to get some information out of that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get any information out of that for another 30 years like we did with Roswell.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if we might get a bit more information out of this one. People are not as easily duped these days. They are easily duped, but not as easily duped as back in 1947. I don't know. Did you read my article about it just came out, I guess, last week. It says, what you think you saw, you did not see.
Was that on Alien Secret News?
It's published there and a couple of other places. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I did skim through it actually. As you know, we had our own Roswell up north of Iroquois Falls, Ontario. About it's a good distance up the line. Well, we call it up the line. So up the Abitibi River, people go hunting and fishing and whatnot. We call it a slang that we have over there called up the line. We had our own little Roswell back in 1954, where a UFO had crashed. Apparently, because I know somebody that's connected to my family saw it, along with two other hunters and fishers, that they saw the UFO crash, and it was quite a fiasco. I investigated it as much as I could, but being that it happened in 1954, a lot of the people that would have remembered that are either dead or they're very elderly, and their memory is not as good as it used to be. You know,
what are you trying to say, man? I mean, you know, I'm kind of elderly myself. I mean, what are you implying there?
I was talking about people in 1954 that would have remembered a UFO crash like that.
Well, you know, I was born in 1953.
My dad was born in 51. I don't think you would have remembered a UFO crash.
No, but I tell you what, I was born in 53, and it would have been 1960, so I was 7 years old. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I've been funny.
In 1960, I saw one fly over us, and I remember it as clearly today as if it happened yesterday.
Well, being up in northern Ontario, it is also very very isolated area, so you're not surprised that not that many people saw it. But those that did report seeing a UFO around that date, a lot of them, some people were told to keep their mouth shut about it. That fact, I know, I was stonewalled by about three, four people stonewalled, said, I'm sorry, but I was told not to talk about it.
Who told them not to talk about it?
Well, according to the story, at least that's the story that's brought down through the Boyd family, where that the family of one of the witnesses of the UFO crash was said that Mr. Boyd, he was told... He said he saw something. He met the beings of a craft that had crashed, but he said he was told not to say anything else, and that was it.
Yeah, but who told him don't say anything?
Canadian Air Force personnel.
Canadian Air Force personnel.
Yep.
Well, I it wouldn't surprise me at all. Not at all.
That don't say anything or else, and that's all they said was or else, and Mr. Boyd was gravy. He wouldn't elaborate on it.
Wow. Kevin, thanks for the call, man. Interesting story about the Roswell up there.
Well, I'm going to go dig back into my notes for it, then I'll probably try to talk to you again about it.
All right. Please do.
All right. Have a good night, man.
All right. All right, folks. The telephone line is open. For those of you who are new and you don't know how this works, let me explain it. The way our telephone system works, when you call... If you get through, we're going to answer the telephone, and you will hear this show in the background. It may go away, and you just start hearing music. That means you got put on hold. All right. If you call and you just start hearing music, you're on hold. So don't go away. If you start hearing music, you made it. That and we know you're there, and we're going to get to you in order of the way the calls come in. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. Open line, we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about except politics. I've had 2 years of way more than enough of that. And we want to talk about the important things in the universe anyway. You know, I've been talking with you over the past couple of years about the new space race. I've been telling you about this new space race, and you know, China's in it, India's in it, Japan is in it. Who else is getting there? I think Iran says they're going to. Anybody that can build a rocket is now in this new space race, and all of them are either already at the moon or they are going to the moon. Now, right now, they're unmanned missions, but Japan's got a satellite circling the moon right now, and I think the European Space Agency also does. And then you've got India. India, on October the, 12th? I believe it was October the 12th. No, October the 22nd. On October the 22nd, India launched an unmanned mission to the moon. And I was reading about this. I found it to be very interesting. Because as I've talked with you about, you know, why is everybody going to the moon? Is it we want to be the first to get there? No, that's been done. We want to be the first to land something on the moon. No, that's been done. We want to be the first to put humans on the moon. No, too late. That's already been done. So what's this new space race to the moon all about? Well, it's just purely speculation based on things that I see in the news. But, you know, China announced they were going and that they were going to build permanent colonies there for the purpose of mining H3. Well, I believe them. They said that's why they're going. I believe that's why they're going. Well, this is an interesting story now about India, because I was reading about their satellite and what they plan to do. Their satellite, called the Chandrayaan-1, is carrying an Indian flag, which will be placed on the lunar surface when the Moon Impactor probe lands on the moon. It's going to be a two-year mission. There are 11 instruments. It has a payload of 11 instruments carried on board. Five of them are Indian, and three are from the European Space Agency. Two are from the U.S., including a radar that can search for ice under the lunar poles, and one from, yes, I already mentioned them, Bulgaria. And, I got a flash message here just a moment ago asking, well, why was I detained by the Yugoslavian border police? And then again by the Bulgarians. It's a long story. Long story. Both twice by the Yugoslavians, and both of those times were illegal. And then once by the Bulgarians, it also was illegal. The border guard insisted that I was driving a car that was stolen, and it wasn't. It was a car that I rented from a rental agency out of Denmark, and the papers were all correct. But, he sort of wanted me to pay him so he, give him a little money and then he'd let me go. Well, you know me, it was a four-hour stay, and he finally turned me loose and was not very happy, nor was I. But those days are behind us, we shall say, and we hope. But here we have a Bulgarian science experiment on board of this satellite from India. Okay, well, that all sounds very interesting. But again, the question that I had about this was, why the moon? Why is everyone headed to the moon? Well, then I found this article. And I found this article to be absolutely fascinating because it says during a two-year orbital mission, talking about this Indian satellite, the Chandrayaan-1, it will provide a detailed map of the mineral, chemical, and topographical characteristics of the moon's surface. There it is. It's a resource scout. Just like the Chinese, the Indian satellite is headed out there to scout for resources. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's not necessarily an evil thing. But, you start looking for why. Why is everybody trying to get to the moon? Well, I think that probably is the reason. I think they have learned that the moon is rich in resources, and what they're going to do is map it. Now, why would you map something? Well, you map it so that you know where stuff is when you go back. That's pretty simple, isn't it? You draw a map so you know where it is when you go back. At some point, I would suspect the Indians intend to begin to mine the resources of the moon as the Chinese plan to. The new space race is about resources. At least I think so. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's what I think. Speaking of space, boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot of news about space. You can't get it on yahoo.com anymore. That's pretty interesting too. Yahoo, on their news section, used to have, you click on science, and then there was a category that was Mars exploration. Now, it's been there for a long, long time. For most of the years that I've been doing this show, that is one of the categories they had, and I always checked it because, you know, me and Mars, I'm interested in Mars. I think it's a fascinating place. Well, shortly after the rovers went up there, that was Spirit and Opportunity. Shortly after they got there, that category disappeared. Now, you check it out. Go to Yahoo News. Click on Science and see if you find a category that says Mars Exploration. Now, they have one that says Space and Astronomy, and you get a little bit of, you know, fizz and pop and froth in that one, but you don't get very much, you know, really good, serious news coverage in that one. And so you have to go elsewhere besides Yahoo to find the news. I find that is true in a lot of news categories. You have to go beyond the mass media in the United States of America if you want to find out the news. If you want to know what color Britney dyed her hair, or if you want to know if she got a new tattoo, well, check the American media. This is Open Line Live. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. We will talk about whatever's on your mind. If you don't like the topics that I'm talking about, or if you're interested in those topics and want to discuss it further, that's the number to call. The line is open. On Open Line Live, it's open right from the beginning of the show. All right. One of the things we have discussed here on this show, and we discussed it actually with Edgar Mitchell, when astronaut Edgar Mitchell was on this show, I mentioned and we talked about the dangers of radiation in doing these long space flights. A trip to Mars using technology that exists now, at least in the public domain, a round trip to Mars is about a year and a half. It's not a quick trip. And that's if you go at the optimum times when Mars is closest to the Earth. And it takes about a year and a half to go over there and come back. So astronauts would be in the space environment for a long time. Furthermore, when they're on Mars, Mars does not have a magnetic field. It does not have a magnetosphere around it. And so it's not protected from solar radiation. It is further away, but solar radiation, further away from the sun than the Earth is. But solar radiation is radiation, and it gets bathed in solar radiation frequently. And that is a real problem if you do a manned mission to Mars, if you do a human mission to Mars. And so there are a lot of arguments for doing a human mission, a manned mission, and a lot of arguments for not doing a manned mission. But the plan is that they're going to do a manned mission somewhere around 2030 to 2040. Now, they first were talking about doing that in around 2020, but that's going to be the return to the moon, I think. So it's, you know, we're a ways away from returning to the moon. But then they're going to Mars. The plans are on, the spaceship is being designed, and it's going to happen. Well, how do you shield these astronauts from all this radiation? There's enough radiation from one solar flare to literally fry the astronauts. Well, in the International Space Station, they have safe zones. In the International Space Station, they get a warning that a solar flare has erupted, and they have a few minutes to get it right, so they go hide in these safe zones. How do you do this if you're in a space capsule headed to Mars? Now, we'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, how are we doing tonight, Kevin? It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I had a question first. Last time you had Mr. Wells on, you guys had quite a bit of problem. I was wondering, are you guys scheduled to have him on again soon? Or
are you talking about Jerry Wills?
Yes.
You know, I talked with Jerry last week, but we didn't talk about that. We have, in general terms, talked about him being back on again. We haven't scheduled him, but we will.
Because I was curious, you know, going through that Stargate, I know he said that he probably would never do it again, but I understand he has people who are interested in doing that. I was wondering if any of them ever thought about taking a camera, video equipment somehow attached to their body with them when they go through there. That would be quite interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but I'll mention it to him, or when he's on again, you can mention it to him.
Yeah, about space and on the different planets and research,
mm-hmm.
I find it quite amazing, you know, that we're all, you know, all these planets, you know, nine of them, are here, you know, in this one little arm of the Milky Way, and you would think that they would all be made out of pretty much the same stuff that's floating around, but yet they're so vastly different. You know, it's kind of, you know, curious about, you know, why that is, you know, and why there's different stuff on other planets that's not on ours, you know, and why ours is richer and abundant of stuff than other ones.
Well, yeah, that is a mystery, and that's one you've hit the nail right on the head as for why why they're so interested in how our planets formed and why are the planets the way they are. That's one of the great mysteries that they are researching. But let me give you a website, and there's an article on this website. I saw it today. About advances in understanding planet formation, and it's the website is Space Daily, all one word, spacedaily.com. So you might want to check that out. It's got some interesting stuff there.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, thanks for the call,
thanks,
Terry.
Cap.
All right. All right, the telephone line is open, and the telephone number is 602-539-9580. One of the things that it's a real mystery, and that, in fact, has not yet been worked out, is how those planets form and why they are different, just as Terry said. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, my name is Ian, and I'm calling.
I didn't have your mic turned on, so let's try it again. Your name is?
My name is Ian, and I'm calling from California.
Okay, Ian. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
Well, let me give you some applause for that. We're glad to have you.
I mainly listen to your pre-recorded podcast, but I do listen live sometimes, and I just happened to stumble on and notice that it was a call-in night, and I just had an interesting concept, and I'd never seen it done before, and I felt like it was important. It seems to me that a lot of people experience interesting things in dreams, and that it might be a possible method of communication for forces outside of our control.
All right.
And it seems that no one has done a study to see if there is a link between the dreams that people are having, if people are having the same dreams. I've talked to people in my life that have had the same dreams as me. And if anyone is listening, I don't really have the means to do it, nor do I know even where to begin. But some sort of anonymous system where you could send your dreams and someone to compile them and to see if people are having the same dreams and if they're essentially being given messages through that.
I think it's an interesting concept. So what you're saying is like 15 people all have the same dream. Is that a message coming from somewhere?
Yeah, that's essentially what I'm saying.
I have not talked with him about this, but I'll tell you someone that you could get in touch with that would really be at the forefront of that kind of research would be Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona in Tucson.
Okay.
He runs a lab that studies all this stuff that a lot of people call paranormal, and he says, well, you know, if it exists, then there's scientific evidence coming from it. There's data to be gained, and let's go for it. And so that's what he does. And it's Dr. Gary Schwartz, and you can find him at University of Arizona, Tucson.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And yes, if anyone else is listening who thinks that this is an interesting concept, maybe we can all contact him together and maybe we could get something going. Because I do feel that that people do have the same dreams. I've talked to many people that have had dreams about messages. Mm-hmm. When they're even contacted, they feel in their dreams and given a message that they're told is important. And
well, look, check with Dr. Schwartz, see if he's done any research on that, and give us a call back and let us know next time we have open line what you found out.
I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, let's see. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob. Two Californians, one right after the other. That's a good deal.
Well, I got a real short one today.
All right.
I solved the problem with the solar radiation on the way to Mars and possibly even after.
How do you do it?
Well, just like the Earth has a magnetosphere, which is basically magnetics. We know we've done a lot with magnetics in the last decade, and we'll probably do a lot more in the next 20 to 30 years. So I would imagine that you could create some type of a magnetosphere around the ship.
You're exactly right. He never hangs on. You're exactly right, though, Bob. The scientists that have been working with this, it's a spin-off technology, a spin-off of nuclear fusion research. And they've developed a way with a small unit to generate a magnetosphere, a force field around a spacecraft. And that's all that's necessary. They said you really only need that little bubble of magnetic protection, and you're okay. It will work. And so they're saying now that this new spaceship force field will make the trip to Mars possible. But let me tell you what else it will do. What else it does is it makes it possible to have a colony on the moon. It makes it possible to have a colony on Mars. Because what you can do for a spaceship, you can do for a colony, a small area. It probably would take several of these magnetosphere generators to cover a small colony, maybe two or three of them, to cover the colony with a little bubble of magnetism. But you only need a small bubble of it in order to withstand the solar radiation. One of the interesting things about Mars, it has no magnetosphere, but it's got these magnetic bands. If you could see them, it would make Mars look like a zebra. It's got magnetic bands. And in those areas, in that band, you are under a little dome of magnetic protection right there. So, maybe you don't need to build a colony with magnetosphere generators if you're on Mars. Maybe all you really need to do is just locate those bands and build your colony in one of those bands. So then you would have, magnetism, a little magnetosphere bubble over you, and that would protect you from the solar radiation. But, that's a very, very important problem that has to be solved. It's a big issue that has to be solved if we're ever going to be sending people to Mars. you have to solve that problem. But if you don't solve that problem, then by the time the space capsule gets to Mars, it is quite possible that the human occupants inside would have already been fried by solar radiation. If for instance, there was a big solar flare, and now you've got this solar wind rushing out through space at 3 million miles an hour, and it's loaded with high-energy particles, high radiation, and it's just rushing out through space. Well, when it hits the capsule or the spaceship that these astronauts are in, if they have no way to protect themselves from that, it would kill them. As I said, on the space station, they already have these safe zones, and they can just go to the safe zones, and those are areas that are shielded for radiation, and they can just close the doors. They're in the safe zone, and they're okay. And then when the solar wind passes by, then they can come out and resume their duties. But they do have to be aware of that. If they were not, if you didn't build some way to protect them from the radiation, then human exploration of Mars and the Moon for prolonged periods of time, the Apollo missions were about 8 days max. But for a prolonged period of time, months at a time, if you were going to do that, you have to be able to protect them from the radiation, or you can't do it because it'll kill them. That is, of course, one of the big issues that gets brought up about the astronauts. Did they actually go to the moon? Because they would have had to pass through the Van Allen radiation belts, Van Allen radiation belts. And there are some papers that have been written, even by some scientists, that say, you know, that would fry them. You couldn't pass through the Van Allen radiation belt. That would fry them. And they use that as, saying, well, they didn't actually go to the moon. They couldn't get there alive. I'm not really sure what I think about that. I mean, there's part of me that says, you know what, I really think we went. And there's part of me that says, boy, I've looked at a lot of these papers that have been written, and some of them, especially the ones written by scientists and physicists, that say it's impossible. That tells me we didn't go. So maybe that's something that you might want to talk about. What do you think? Did we actually go to the moon? And look, if you call me to talk about did we actually go to the moon, don't just call up and tell me, I don't think we went. I want to know why, because I'm curious about it. I'm not sure what I think about that. I mean, if you force me to answer, I would say, well, yeah, I think we went. But I have also, I've read the papers and reports by scientists that say that's not possible because of the radiation. So I'd like to know, what do you think and why do you think it? Did we go or did we not go? And if we did go, how do you think we got through the Van Allen radiation belt? So, all right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue with Open Line Live. Some of you need to wake up and find your telephone. It's probably hiding under you with the TV remote. And welcome back. I've been talking about space, and I've been talking about, some of the real challenges in space. And I am interested, quite interested in, I know some of you think for sure we went to the moon, and I think some of you, I'm talking about with manned missions, we know for sure that we've been there with satellites and with landers. Some of you think that for sure we landed people on the moon, and some of you think for sure we didn't. Now, as I said, if you back me in a corner and make me answer right away, I would say, yeah, we went. And I do think the preponderance of evidence is there. But, boy, that Van Allen radiation belt, now, that is a mystery. How did we get through that and the astronauts live? So some of you think we did, and I'd like to know, and I'd like also to know why you think we did. And then I also would like to hear from those of you who think we did not, that we have never landed men on the moon, if you think that's the case. But I'd like to know, what is it that makes you think we did not? You can help me make up my mind about that by dialing 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. One of our callers was talking about the discovery of planets, and, you know, there is something called the Exoplanet Task Force of the Astronomy and Astrophysics Advisory Committee. Are you aware of that? Let me say it again. The Exoplanet Task Force of the Astronomy and Astrophysics Advisory Committee. That's a big mouthful, isn't it? We'll talk about what they're working on, and then before we get out of here tonight, of course, we have another hour and some minutes, we're going to talk about some really surprising information coming in from Mr. Buzz Aldrin. All right. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta, Kevin.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, yeah, it's about the landing. I think it's a question mark is whether or not we actually landed. I think, you know, we've heard people say we were warned not to come back, so I think there's a chance. But I think that the footage, I think they went ahead and did some footage ahead of time, because this is after Roswell, many, you know, years after Roswell, if you think Roswell's the first time we found out about aliens. And so they knew we're probably going to see some stuff that you couldn't show live footage. And so the video with, you know, the people talking about the shadows and all this stuff, and, you know, that all might be, you know, true about that video's fake, but...
All right, well, how do you think we got through the Van Allen radiation belt?
I don't know, but anytime anyone says, well, they couldn't do this, or, you know, this, yeah, this couldn't happen, that's impossible. It just reminds me of them, you know, I think it was Carl Sagan, or maybe it wasn't, maybe I shouldn't say that, that said, well, it's too far for them to get here, you know, it would take too long, you know, and that's just goofy. So, I don't know, maybe we figured it out, Kevin.
Well, you know, I ask... a scientist about this, and he didn't really have an explanation other than to say, well, he said, look, some of my colleagues say it's impossible for us to go through the Van Allen radiation belt with astronauts because it would fry them. He said, but you know, there was a time when scientists were saying you can't sail very far out to sea or you'll fall off the edge.
Yeah, and I saw a documentary it was the History Channel, the UFO Files, and it was a guy who was retired, who was an Air Force guy, and he said this because only his buddy was dead, and he could say this now. It was a friend of the vice president of Lockheed Martin, and he told him, if you'd seen it on Star Wars or Star Trek, we've been there and done that. And so I think we probably did make it through the Van Allen belt.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I think they went for two reasons. One was the comment that was Neil Armstrong made that said, they don't want us here. And the other one was they went up there to look for a rock. And if you remember, that particular rock was sitting almost on a pedestal waiting for them. And I think they got through the radiation belt using mica. It's because if I understand correctly, mica is a good shield against radiation.
Well, now, I didn't know that. I'll have to check that. Mica, which, of course, is a crystalline stuff. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but years and years and years ago, when they first started putting a window in the oven of cook stoves, the window was made of mica. It was not made of glass. It was made of mica because it could withstand the heat radiation better than glass could at that time. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Now you know.
Yeah, I know.
Now you know. You have been to school with Dr. Kevin. Brent, okay. Thank you for the call, man. All right, folks. It is Open Line Live, and I really would like to hear your thinking on that. This whole deal about the trip to the moon. I'm not saying that I disbelieve it. That's not the case at all. I think we went, but I'm not sure how that could possibly be because of that Van Allen radiation belt. I was mentioning the Exoplanet Task Force, and this task force has been looking for Earth-sized and Earth-like planets around other stars, and they say that they have a strategy now for obtaining the first detection of Earth-like planets around other stars within the next 15 years. And I'm not really sure what the new technology is, but there are some white papers out about this. You know, they were saying at one time, in fact, my entire life as I was growing up and then all the way through college and everything, that there are no planets outside of this solar system. This is a unique place. There are no other planets. And then I can remember in science classes asking the question, how can you be sure? I mean, look how many stars there are out there. We haven't looked at all of them. How can you be sure that this is the only place in all the universe where there are planets around a star? And I remember being told, we've got the most powerful telescopes that have ever been built, and every night around this world, peering through the most powerful telescopes ever, are astronomers that are looking, they've looked all over the heavens and have never seen another planet. And lots of people took that answer and ran with it, and that was the gospel fact, you see, that there are no other solar systems. There are no other planets around stars. This is it. Well, we now know differently. We now know that this is not a unique place. We now know about some 300 other planets out there. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Yes, Kevin. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. And yourself?
Outstanding, sir.
Yeah, there you go.
See, I discovered a long time ago nobody pays me more to have a bad day.
And you can restart it anytime you want.
Yeah, so I don't have bad days. They're not on the schedule.
Oh, good for you. A positive attitude, just the beginning.
Yeah.
Wait, I was calling about your talk about the moon mission. I personally, you know, hearing Aldrin and the other astronaut that just released the UFO information, Edgar Mitchell. You know, these are practical men. They, mm-hmm. You know, they've said we've been to the moon. We've been to the moon. And somebody said you can actually see where they've landed with a good telescope.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But now let me throw this into the mix. Do you think it is possible that they had technology on board that nobody has talked about that protected them as they went through the radiation belt?
Yeah, that's quite possible. They didn't want that information released so other people could follow in their footsteps, possibly. You know, that makes sense.
And so now the story is just now coming out that, hey, you know, you might could use a little generator thing to generate a magnetosphere around a spacecraft, and then you could go to Mars. So just now coming out with that information, maybe.
Yeah, that's quite possible. And the way technology is tripping over itself, and I can just imagine the amount of technology that's out there that we don't even know about or aren't aware of.
Kevin, I'm into a break. Do you want to hold on through the break, or does that do it for you?
No, that does it for me tonight. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, man. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this break. More with Open Line Live. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Open Line Live tonight. That means the telephone line is yours. Who is my guest tonight? You are. 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. That's the telephone number. Now, you know, we were talking about, I've sort of been pushing this along now for the past several minutes, but I am interested in it. And we've been talking about, did we actually land on the moon? Something in me says, yes, we did. And then that Van Allen radiation belt sort of backs me off, some of the stuff I've read about that. But I think it is entirely possible that they had technology on board that protected them, and nobody's talked about it. I mean, I think that's a possibility. Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm fine.
This is Tony in Oklahoma.
Okay, Tony in Oklahoma.
Yep. I have to agree with you. I kind of think it's most likely that we did land on the moon, but there's still something, I don't know what the hell you'd call it, but there's something in the back of my mind that just won't let go, and it's a question mark, and I can't get rid of it. And as far as the Van Allen belt goes, mm-hmm. I heard, and I can't remember where I heard this, but I heard that we made it through the Van Allen belt because aliens accompanied us.
Really?
That's what I heard.
And so we had an alien craft that was providing protection for us?
Yes.
Wow. Now, you have no idea where you heard that?
No, I can't remember where I heard this. I'm going to swear to it, but it might have been Stan Deo who said this.
Well, I'll ask him. I'll be contacting Stan Deo here in the near future, and I'll ask him about that. Go ahead.
Fantastic stories about how we've been to the moon, been to Mars. Mars since like 1966, and the moon around 1960, 62, something like that. And I believe he's too that said something like one of the previous callers said that anything you've seen on Star Trek and Star Wars, all that, already been there, done that. Anything you can imagine, we can already do.
Yeah, Boyd Bushman has said that, and
right.
You know, I think that's probably the case, and I think there's a world of technology out there way beyond the wildest dreams and imaginations of any of us.
Isn't it a crime that it's all secret? Imagine what this world could be like.
Yeah, but imagine what it would be like if it fell into the hands of someone like bin Laden or Ahmadinejad.
I'm talking about if it got into the right hands and or maybe stuff that could help change this world.
Yeah, but they can't even keep guns and bullets out of the hands of these thugs and bullies. And, you know, if this super technology were to fall into those hands, not even James Bond on his best day could save us.
Jimmy couldn't help, huh?
That's right. That's right.
Baby.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
Take care.
All right. All right, the telephone is yours, ladies and gentlemen, and the telephone number is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. Did we go or did we not? Well, these scientists are looking for the scientists of the Exoplanet Task Force are looking for ways to find not just how to go to Mars, but they're looking for new Earths. And NASA chartered a study that was done by the Exoplanet Task Force, and what they got was 84 white papers on how to detect Earth-like planets. Now, an Earth-like planet means a planet that is the near the same size as the Earth, near the same mass, and orbiting its star in about the same position. Earth-like planets. Now, I'm going to throw a little bit of a kink in the works here. You know how I often say that, you know, they go out to Mars and land something on Mars, and they say we're looking for signs of the chemicals and the organic stuff that it would take to have life. We're looking for the possibility of life. And then you ask the scientists, well, what does that mean? What are you looking for? Well, there's certain chemicals we're looking for and certain things. There's got to be oxygen and there's got to be water. And you've heard me say, why? Why does there have to be oxygen? And why does there have to be water? Well, because we're looking for life, they would say. Well, that's life like us. But who's to say that there couldn't be a life that thrives on something very different than oxygen and water? In fact, we have found organisms, ancient, very ancient organisms, living on this planet, that if you expose them to oxygen, they die. They live in a soup of hydrocarbon and methane and CO2. Well, that sounds a whole lot like some of these planets and some of these moons of planets. For instance, Titan, right? On Titan, which is a moon of Saturn, there's methane galore. I mean, there's just methane everywhere. And there's CO2 and there's nitrogen and it's a whole lot of methane. And it's so cold that you have liquid methane. And so there are scientists that would say, well, no life can exist there. Oh, I beg to differ. We know about life on this planet that lives in a very similar environment to that. So if it can live here, why can't it live there? If life happens, if that's true, people say, well, life happens. If life happens, it's going to happen within the parameters that it's given on whatever planet it's on. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name?
Thank you. I finally got through. I got a number mixed up. But
your first name and where are you calling from?
Clay, and I'm calling from Arkansas, Rogers, Arkansas.
Outstanding. We're on the radio there in Rogers, Arkansas.
Do what now?
We're on the radio in Rogers, Arkansas.
Yes, you are. I don't mean to change the subject.
Oh, it's open line, so that's fine. Change the subject.
Okay. Last night I heard you talking about ghosts and different things.
Uh-huh.
Now, the core of the planet has magnetic waves. You have magnetic waves above the planet. I mean and food and different forms of energy could be caught, basically, between the core planet waves. You understand what I'm trying to get at? I'm a little bit nervous, okay?
Don't be nervous. Just pretend you're talking to your grandpa.
Oh, okay. But anyway, like different types of food can give off different types of energy, different stress levels.
Yeah.
About the Abraham Lincoln ghost, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a possibility. And furthermore, about 3 feet of Earth would protect you from magnetic waves. I mean, from sunlight waves or magnetic waves for your other thing that you're talking about tonight. It's just possibility.
So just plain old dirt, huh?
Just plain old dirt, yeah. I don't know how you would get it up there, but I've heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but anyway, it's quite interesting talking and listening to your television, your TV program.
All right, now, you. Let me ask you, you listened last night, right?
I listened last night, yes, sir.
What did you think about, did you think I was being unkind when I called them sub-intellectual mud-sucking toads?
I've never faced that kind of problem, so I'm a loner, and I keep to myself, and I don't express my opinions about anything hardly in our society. I just let society
let it do its thing.
By itself, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Clay. Well, listen, I appreciate the call.
Okay. Have a great day, sir.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Rogers, Arkansas. As a matter of fact, I think I will have to check, but I think that's the most recent radio station to join our family, and hello to everyone in Rogers, Arkansas. I could be wrong about this. If I am, someone can email me and tell me, but I think that's KHUL in Rogers, Arkansas. All right. What do you think about it, folks? What do you think about it? You know, we're talking about a lot of things here tonight, and as Clay said, you know, he said, I don't really mean to change the subject, but that's what open line is. It means we'll talk about whatever you wish for us to talk about. Along with that, sprinkled in there with that, I really am interested in what you think about this trip to the moon. Because, you see, that Van Allen radiation belt, if we can't protect ourselves going through that, and obviously we did somehow, if we went, but if you can't do that, you're never going to Mars. That rush of radiation as you go through that Van Allen belt, that's just the first of your challenges. Because if there is a solar flare while you're out there, well, just the ambient radiation in space when you're out there for that long unprotected, then you are toast. But if there's a solar flare and you're not protected, you're toast right now. So this whole thing about being able to go to Mars hinges on how did we get through the Van Allen radiation belt? And perhaps an even more cogent question is how are we going to do it again? I don't hear anybody talking about how are we going to get through that Van Allen radiation belt to go back to the moon. It's as if that's not an issue. Well, it is an issue. It is an issue. You got to be able to do that if you're going to go to the moon. And obviously, you got to do that if you're going to Mars. Now, I read to you, I didn't read it, but I reported to you about some new technology that has been developed where they say they can generate a force field around the spacecraft, a magnetosphere, a miniature mini magnetosphere around the spacecraft, and that's enough to protect the occupants inside from this radiation. But we're just now hearing that. What about way back in the late 60s, early 70s, when we were sending men to the moon? How did we get through the Van Allen radiation belt? Do you think we went, or do you think we didn't went? Yeah, I know, that's bad English. Well, these scientists working on finding another Earth, don't you find that interesting? Why are they looking for another Earth? Well, you might say, well, maybe they're looking for life. Maybe. And then again, maybe what's happening is they're looking for a place for life to evacuate to. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, good evening, Kevin. This is Steve in Fort Worth.
Hi, Steve.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, do you think that like making a lot of travels through space would make you turn gray and all your hair fall out?
I don't know, but if that's the case, have you seen me? Maybe I'm a space traveler.
I'm thinking of the little grays, you know, because they're gray, and as I recall, none of them got any hair. So I'm wondering some latent effects from all their space travel.
Well, now, that's a good point. It could be. But then again, we hear about extraterrestrial beings. We've heard reports from people who have talked with extraterrestrial beings that look just like us. I mean, one of the most famous was Betty and Barney Hill.
That's right.
And so they don't seem to have a problem with it. Maybe it is... maybe it's just not a problem if you have some sort of magnetosphere generator around the spacecraft, or generating a magnetosphere around the spacecraft. Maybe that's just not a problem.
You know, I mean, I was a young man when all the Apollo missions were being launched, and I seem to believe that yes, we did go to the moon. You know, I know a little bit about radiation. I worked around it. I think that what I've heard is that the astronauts, they received like an average on their trip, they got like about a one REM dose of radiation, which they say is about equivalent to, you know, just like background radiation, just like living on Earth. And when we walk around every day, you know, there's background radiation, and it depends where you live. Some areas have more background radiation than other areas, and like the higher you live, the higher you, like if you live in Denver, you got like 10 times more radiation than somebody who lives at a low altitude, like maybe where you're at. But a one REM is not a, that would be like a, what they say is like a 3-year accumulated dose that they receive in one trip. And the odds of...
So what you're saying then is the Van Allen radiation belt, the trip through there is really not a problem.
No. The problem is with solar flares, because then you get supercharged particles coming at you, and there's no protection from that when you're in outer space. But when they did the launches, they kind of looked at the solar weather, you might say, and they were able to avoid that to the most extent that they could, and they also. For their mission, they chose an area that was known to be in the belts that were the least hazardous to their health. And they also went through them pretty quickly. At the speeds that they were going, they didn't hang around. They might have been a 30-40 minute peak time in the belt itself. That's where they picked up most of the radiation. And I'm thinking that, maybe their suits that they wore, could have had some kind of protection. Because, I mean, really, the suits, I think that's what separates our space program from a lot of other space programs.
Once they were out in space, they got out of their launch suits, out of their pressurized suits, and they were just in their, the jumpsuits, just, cloth.
Well, there might have been something in the cloth, you never know. I definitely believe we landed on the moon. There's no, in my mind, there's no question about it.
Well, one of the strongest arguments for that we did land on the moon, one of the strongest arguments, in my opinion, would be the space rocks, that the moon rocks that they brought back. Because those have been examined by scientists from all over the world. Literally thousands of scientists have looked at these rocks and done studies on them. And not a single one of them has ever said, oh, hold on a minute, this is a fake.
Right. No, I believe those came from the surface of the moon. And one other article I read today, speaking of the moon, there was an article saying that they believe there may be life on the moon. There's crater areas that are dark and are protected from the sun. And now somebody's coming up with a theory to say that, maybe there is life that we've overlooked that could be possibly on the moon. And so that may be another reason why people have regained interest in going back there.
What kind of life would it be? Would it be microbial life, or would it be more complex?
I think they're looking at like a microbial type life.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking that since these craters are shielded from the sun, like they're always, it's like being on the dark side of the moon kind of scenario, where these craters are always shielded from the sun, where there could be ice there and maybe water that wouldn't be evaporated, and life could begin to kind of like spawn there in those areas. And I also wanted to ask you a question the other night when you were talking about giants.
Mm-hmm.
I think your guest, I don't recall his name.
Walter Bosley.
Walter. And he mentioned that there was some evidence of he kept what he said was a pre-flood evidence of giants. And I was kind of curious of that because, in the biblical record, I mean, we know
that's what he was referring to.
Yes.
Yeah, he wasn't referring to any evidence that supports that. He was referring to the fact that they are mentioned in the Bible as existing before the flood.
Well, let me just ask you this, because, Adam, the pre-flood people, they lived to be old. Adam was like 800 years old, the Bible claims, and Noah, he was like 500 years old. And, let's just say for this conversation that the ark that Noah built, he actually built it, and it's kind of like, you would have to be a huge individual to pick up these planks of wood and to manipulate them around and to get them fitted together for a ship. And also, there gives an account of the people they built the, they built that one building, to reach the sky.
Yeah, the tower at Babel.
Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, there had to be humongous people lifting these stones and placing them where they were. And anyway, when I see these great structures that the Bible talks about being built, I don't think that a man, my size was building those vessels or those buildings. I envision giants,
You want to hang on through the break?
Sure, I'll hang on.
Hang on through the break, and we'll talk about those giants when I come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And let's go back to the telephone and Steve in Fort Worth. Are you still with me, Steve?
Yes, Kevin.
All right. I had to cut you off, and you were making a point. I want to give you the opportunity. You were talking about these giants.
Sure.
So go ahead and make your point, and then maybe I'll have a comment or two about it. We'll see.
Well, like I said, in the pre-flood condition, the Bible, I'm using what the Bible, some of the terminology that's in the Bible, and one of your callers the other night, he mentioned a gentleman here in the Glen Rose area that's done some study with the pre-flood stuff. And anyway, I think the Bible talks about a firmament in the sky. In other words, there was a heavy liquid atmosphere at that time, which protected the inhabitants.
Okay, well, firmament, the word that is translated in the King James into English, it's translated firmament. And that word actually, if you were translating it into our English today, you would translate it as expanse.
Okay, an expanse, like a heavens.
Consider it to be space.
That's true. I think that the early, I don't know where I've heard this before, but I'm going to continue on with this.
Sure, go ahead.
There was a higher content of liquid or hydrogen, let's say, in the atmosphere to protect early man. That's how, and I think that's how they wound up to live 800 years old. You know, they were being protected from the harmful radiation that we experience today. And I believe that this, my theory is that the reason we have a finite lifespan today is because we just absorb a lot more radiation than they did, you know, in those days. And
Well, it could be. However, the cut down on life, on life expectancy, when I mean the cut down, I mean we went from 500, 600, 700, 800 years old overnight to 120. And for those of you that get nervous when somebody mentions the Bible, I'll just get over it. It's an ancient document. There are lots of ancient documents. You don't have to look at it as a religious book to talk about it.
Right.
And this ancient document says that the God of the Bible...
Call it an ancient record.
Okay, I prefer the word document. Some people would say it's a record, and some people would say it's fiction. But it is an ancient document. And it says that we reach a point there where God, that's presented in the Bible, says, okay, that's it. I'm going to reduce your lifespan to 120 years. And then later, there is another verse where this same God says, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm getting fed up with you guys. I'm going to reduce your lifespan to 70 years. Okay? And on our best, on the nations that have the best life expectancy, none of them have a life expectancy of 80 years. It's, in the mid-70s. Now, I find that to be very interesting. It happened very quickly. So is it possible that what was done was at the DNA level?
Well, I think, I think so, and that's kind of what I'm saying. That's my angle with the radiation, because high levels of radiation, that's the biggest fear with any time you get into a heavy concentrated radiation area, is that you're going to affect the DNA. In other words, you're going to alter the DNA, and so I think that, like I said, my theory is that in the beginning there was a protection in the atmosphere that held back the super powerful radiation, and as time progressed, and after the flood, that shielding was removed, and man, in other words, was exposed to higher levels of radiation. And then today, with the depletion of certain, you know, ozone stuff and things like that, you know, we're even being exposed to even more radiation. And so it's just
Well, and we're generating a great deal of radiation of all types. Radio frequencies, I mean, there are millions of radio frequencies that just exist naturally. And then we grab one of them.
Cell phones.
And,
that's the latest thing is the cell phones.
Yeah, we grab this frequency and we excite that frequency with a transmitter. And in essence, what we've done is we've amplified that frequency. And so that's all flowing through us now, and there are thousands of those. So it's, we're living in a radiation soup now.
Yeah. Well, I was just wanted to have, put my viewpoint in on that, because I was thinking about, you know, like the, you know, you got the great redwoods out there in California, and they're huge, but, you know, they're kind of unique, and they're, once they're gone, they're gone. There's nothing, there might be a latent gene, like you were saying, in the DNA that's held them this long, but, you know, that's it. That's the last of the Mohicans out there. And so some of the giants that have been seen in history, in recent history, they may have been, and like the same scenario, they had a latent gene that was carried on, and they were a little hardier than the rest of us, and they got to be taller and stronger, you know. But it's,
yeah, and you know something? I'm not really sure that they have left us. All right, thank you for the call. I have to run to this next one. I appreciate it. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Ah, what has happened here? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Well, as you can hear, folks, the calls are coming in. And yet, there's no voice. It's a mystery. It's paranormal. All right, let's try it again. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Tony again.
Yes, Tony?
I just had a quick question. Were you going to tell us something about Buzz Aldrin?
Oh, yes. I am indeed. Thanks for reminding me of that. Let me look at the clock. Yeah, we've got time to cover this. I appreciate that, Tony. Thanks for the call.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. 602-539-9580. That's the number. All right. We've been talking about Buzz Aldrin. I'm sorry. We've been talking about Mars and space travel and some of the problems like radiation. And there's this interesting interview that Buzz Aldrin did recently. Here, this is from Paris is where this story comes from. And that's, for those of you in Texas, we're not talking about Paris, Texas, okay? Which, by the way, I have been to on several occasions. And it's a fine town. All right. He says that the first astronauts sent to Mars should be prepared to spend the rest of their lives there in the same way that European pioneers headed to America knowing they would not return home. How about that? Buzz Aldrin says the first people we send to Mars ought to be people who are prepared to stay forever. They're never coming back to Earth again. That's pretty tough, isn't it? Would you go if you knew that you were not coming back again? Would you go? And he gives some reasons for it. One of the reasons, he says, look, it takes a ton of money to get them there and a ton of technology to get them there. Once you get them there and get them established there, they need to stay. And he says, you know, there's all kinds of discovery and all kinds of exploration and science that could be done by them if they stay. And then, of course, that makes it much easier and safer and less expensive to send more and to build up a colony over there. And he said, you know, if you're going to put a few people there and ensure their appropriate safety, would you then go through all that trouble and bring them back immediately after a year or a year and a half? He says, it's not worth it. If you're going to send them, they need to be prepared to stay for the rest of their lives. This mission that NASA is planning, both NASA and the European Space Agency are planning to send humans to Mars. And, of course, we've been talking about some of the problems that you've got to solve in order to get there and in order to live. But Buzz Aldrin says they need to plan on staying for the rest of their lives. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Bob from California.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, I just wanted to make one quick comment and hang up. I thought it was kind of funny. It just popped in my head.
All right.
Well, if Buzz Aldrin said that, I wonder if when NASA gave him an agreement of what he would do on the Mars or on the Moon mission, if they asked him to stay there forever, if he would have gone. Thank you.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's an excellent question. Would he have done it? I think it's asking people to do maybe a little too much. But I see his point. He says, look, you know, this mission that we have planned to Mars is going to send about six people to Mars with life support systems. And also there will be pre-positioned before they get there. We will have already landed some pods there that have life support supplies and systems and other gear and food. Okay, well, what if you get to Mars and they have told you plan on staying the rest of your life? Well, now that might actually be sort of in the background of what's being discussed. Now, the reason I say that, and Buzz Aldrin's talking about it now, but the reason I say it might sort of be in the background of what's being discussed about these Mars missions, remember when the scientist down at Tucson said, hey, you know what? That dirt on Mars, we analyzed it, and that dirt on Mars is like the dirt in your backyard. You could grow asparagus in it. Maybe that's exactly what they were looking for. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mickey in Atlanta.
Hi, Mickey.
And I think I may have an answer to your Van Allen question.
All right.
I found this on a website, a NASA website.
Mm-hmm.
And what it talks about is NASA getting Oak Ridge National Laboratory to do some experiments before they sent any of the Apollo crews home. And I'd like to read for you the last two sentences of this. So,
all right. But can you hang on through the break?
I'll just be tickled to, Kevin.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. We're on Final Approach here at the Kevin Smith Show. We have just a few minutes left, and we're talking with Mickey in Atlanta. So, Mickey, you found on a NASA website information about NASA contracting with Oak Ridge National Laboratories to prepare the astronauts for their trip to the moon, right?
That is absolutely correct, sir.
All right. And you said you wanted to read the last couple of sentences there.
I like the last two sentences. It said, they concluded that proper shielding would be key to successful flight, not only for living organisms, but for electronic instrumentation as well. to develop shielding for the Apollo crews, Oak Ridge researchers recycled the lab's power shielding facility, which had hoisted shielding experiments aloft for the 1950s nuclear plane project. Now, this is from an astrophysicist working at NASA, I assume, named Laura Whitlock. So what it appears here, Kevin, they had some shielding that they used to keep nuclear radiation from escaping from a nuclear plane project and just reused it on Apollo to keep the radiation from getting through to the astronauts.
I wonder why they haven't addressed that. Because that's one of the big things that people who say we never went to the moon, that's one of the big points they make is the radiation belt. And I wonder why NASA has never responded to that. Or if they have, they did it quietly. They didn't make a big deal out of it.
Well, I found this rather quickly just doing a web search of Van Allen radiation belt. I think on the third site that I came up with was this NASA site. And it's right here, answer from this Laura Whitlock, and that's what she says, and it makes complete sense. If you already had shielding already, and you weren't using it anymore because there was no more nuclear plane project, why not just use it for the Apollo?
Does it say what this shielding was? Was it like between the walls of the Apollo capsule? Is that?
No, it does not say that. It does not say exactly what the shielding was. It does not say how it was installed, where it was installed, etc. This is the extent I found on this website. Now, if I did some more research, I might very well find some more information about it. But that's what it says, and is readily available on this NASA site, NASA Goddard Space Flight Center site, for anybody who wants to go look for it. The date of this answer, Kevin, is June the 30th, 1997.
So that must have been during the time when that question was really beginning to boil.
Well, you could be correct about that. But like I said, there is the date, June the 30th, 1997, when I assume Laura Whitlock formulated this answer, and it's wound up now on the NASA site.
Well, that
makes complete sense.
It does indeed. Mickey, I thank you for the call, and thanks for that information.
And thank you so much for your wonderful show, Kevin.
Well, thank you, sir. All right, the telephone number, and you'll have to call like immediately if you're going to call, is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. And we've got time for one more call. That makes sense. It makes perfect sense. And it's not something that I had run across. So I learned something here tonight, and that's a good thing. One of the things I say about this show is that I get as much out of this show as you do. I learn new things all the time, and I hear new things all the time. I hear things that sometimes, you know, I hear something where I think, boy, that's just way around the corner, and I don't know if I buy that, just like you. And sometimes I hear something where I say, that's completely plausible. And then sometimes I hear something where I say, shrug my shoulders and say, you know, I don't know. And this thing with the Van Allen radiation belt and the documents or the papers that I've read about this really raise what I think is a valid point that there's just, you know, too much radiation for humans to survive in it. Okay. Now we've heard from Mickey in Atlanta that NASA's answer to that is that they use shielding that had been used in a 1950s nuclear airplane project, and they used it for the Apollo mission. Now I would like to know, where did they put it? You had the skin of the spacecraft, And then, of course, you had the inside walls of the spacecraft. So I'm guessing that it's sort of like sheets of stuff that they put between those two walls. Don't know that, but it would seem logical. If you run across an answer to that, I'd like to hear it. What do you think about Buzz Aldrin's idea? What about his idea? Bob out in California said, well, if back when NASA contracted with him for him to go to the moon, would he have agreed to go to the moon if they had told him, you can never come home? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, how you doing tonight? This is Ryan up here from Puget Sound area.
Yeah, Ryan.
I'm sure it's a lot cooler up here than it is down there, but sometimes I wish I lived down in Arizona versus up here.
It's not bad here at this time of the year. It's actually just shy of wonderful this time of the year.
This time of the year up here, it gets kind of damp, but I know we're getting close to the end of the show. I just wanted to... what do you think about these light balls that are seen in the sky? It seems to me that there's a lot of reports lately about these little light balls, sometimes in a triangle form, sometimes mm-hmm. in a square form.
You know when you had Sam Maranto on from MUFON?
Yeah.
And he was talking about that Tinley Park sighting in Illinois?
Yep.
Well, they did a UFO Hunters show about that, what was amazing about it was the three light balls that are there. They did an experiment with balloons and flares. They mm-hmm. showed it on the episode. I'm sure you can find it somewhere. But
yeah, I saw it.
And they tried to do it, and when they videotaped it, I mean, there's no way that those were flares and balloons the way.
All right, now you saw that episode, and you've heard me talk about flares before.
Yeah.
And in watching that episode, did you see what I was talking about? You could see the trail of smoke.
Yeah.
You could see the balloons.
Off fluid under the ground. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. If I'm sorry.
Well, you could see that it was flares. And, I mean, flares look like flares. They don't look like something else.
But, you know, what was kind of interesting about that case was after that sighting in Illinois, after the Ozzy Osbourne concert, with the three little light bulbs, I mean, who knows what those are? I mean, whatever they are, they're amazing. There was another sighting south from there in Texas. And then after that, I think it was like maybe a couple weeks later, there was another sighting down in South Mexico. And if you follow the map and you take the dates on each of these sightings of these triangular objects with these light balls, it appears to have moved south. It's kind of an interesting case. I know you're almost at the end of the show.
We've got about, you got about 10 seconds left.
Yeah, I can't help but call every night sometimes.
Well, I'm glad you do. I want to thank you for the call, and indeed, those are interesting sightings. I don't know what they are, but they are interesting, mysterious. I do know what they are not. They are not flares. Please give me a break. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.